FederalDrive.
FederalNewsRadio.com. It's the only place to read Mike Causey. Get the latest news on your federal pay, benefits, and retirement at FederalNewsRadio.com. Search term Causey.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, world-famous Dennis Wisnowski. He has his own Wikipedia entry and everything. Applause, yay! Dennis, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you, John.
And listen to this title. This is a great title. Dennis is the Chief Architect and CTO, Business Missionary, at the United States Department of Defense. He looks at things from 40,000 feet, and he has a lot of influence on what happens over in the Pentagon and the DOD in general. You can Google your name, Wisnowski, and find your Wikipedia entry and all kinds of different adventures, publishing adventures and many different degrees and all kinds of areas. Tell us about your background and how you wound up in this position.
Well, I'm from western Pennsylvania, Little Washington, as we called it back in those days, and a long time between there and getting to here. This position is one of those be careful what you ask for things. Because I was teaching how to do the DoD architecture framework and happened to have one class here in Washington, D.C. And I was told by my students that they weren't doing this the way that I was teaching it. And a teacher never quite likes to hear that. So I said, how should you be doing it? And they said, like you're teaching it. So I decided that I would write a letter to Mr. Rumsfeld, who was the Secretary of Defense at the time. And in that letter, I put a book that I'd written called DoDAF Wisdom, which was a very simple way of building these architecture products. And I sent this letter to him on one page through the U.S. Postal Service. And about 3 months later, I got a call from someone in his office saying, if you can help us, come on over. Because what I'd said in this letter is that they'd wasted a whole lot of money doing this architecture in a way that wasn't efficient. In fact, it was it. 40,000 feet, as you said, and my purpose was to get it down to something that was actionable, executable, words that are much more for today than way in the future. So I was asked to come here as a contractor. I did that for 6 months, and they were very satisfied with what was happening, and so then they asked me to trade my pink badge, which is a contractor badge, for a white badge, and I've been here now close to 5 years.
Wow, that's great. That's great. You know, on the Wikipedia entry, it's amazing the range of articles you've written on. I mean, your first article was about a stepper motor. Now, I may be the only person listening who knows what a stepper motor is. I know what a linear stepper motor is. I understand exactly how they're used in the mid-70s. But you take, you know, this is really hands-in-the-ground knowledge of hardware and electronics. And then 30 years later, you've taken this to writing articles for the Common Defense Quarterly on these very abstract concepts of managing information. So you've gone from a little seedling to this huge, big, it's like mustard seed and the huge mustard plant. I mean, that's the range you have here. And that's what I want to talk about today. Talk a little about some of the lessons you've learned all of these years and these wide areas of writing you've done. And I think we're going to focus in on this article in the Common Defense Quarterly talking about enterprise architecture. And this is, in fact, a call to action, isn't it?
It is definitely a call to action. The enterprise architecture is that high-level view. When they asked me to stay, and I was the chief architect at that time. That's what my title was in that contract job. But I wanted to add CTO, chief technical officer, because that enables me to actually build some things. I am a builder. Some people tag me as a visionary a long time ago. I'll go with that. I like to look over the horizon. However, it's really important for me to be able to make progress along the way. some of the things that I've done to satisfy, I guess, a native curiosity, drive motorcycles, sail boats, fly airplanes, and other things like that, scuba diving. And each one of those requires some intense planning, or the consequences won't be so good. On the other hand, the intense planning without finding out whether you can do it isn't satisfying either. So stepper motors are those little tiny things. Enterprise architecture are those real big things. Somewhere between that is where we all live. You know, that's what I like.
What's interesting is I think the knowledge of the small details enables you to get the bigger picture and realize, well, I understand what these guys are going through. I've been through there, and I know what these headaches are all about. One issue that I've seen over your career, these 25, 30 years, is Tim Berners-Lee, the Internet, and him looking at hypertext. And about, I think, 7, 8 years ago, he took a look at the whole Internet and try to make it more practical and more usable. And I think that's what you're trying to do here with this call to action, is looking at all the information that's dispersed all over the Department of Defense and how can we organize this information and make it practical and efficiently use the resources that we have.
That's exactly right. We are the largest organization in the world. We're about as big as the rest of the federal government all put together. And we have certain restrictions and laws and rules and regulations that maintain the autonomy of our business operations, just like any diverse conglomerate would. However, at the same time, we have to have a common bottom line. And that's where I came in, where we have spent a lot of money and a lot of energy of really smart people for the last 20 years or so, building systems that we certainly can't argue that they don't work. They do work. We have the finest military establishment in the universe. However, the cost has been continually going up, and it's been going up in the expenditure of IT. And those costs reside in the myriad databases, data stores that we have all over the universe, and various different ways of getting that data, and then finally being able to decide what the data means. What is the ground truth? So when Tim Berners-Lee came up with this concept of the semantic web, Web 3.0, and I was looking for how to deal with our problem. Our research for a couple of years before we took the plunge said that this absolutely makes sense. The technology to do it, however, was invented by the DOD. It was invented by DARPA in the late 90s. And so we looked at that technology. How mature is it? Can it be used? And then decided to start a series of experiments with the total support of our senior leadership, my boss, Beth McGrath, the Deputy Undersecretary for Management Operations. And it's been very successful so far, and we expect it to continue to be that way.
You know, I think the historians will look back and look at DARPA and say, geez, Vince Cerf and Ernest Forman and a lot of these early people, I mean, they really did some things right. They could maybe foresee what was going to happen in this. And we take a look at this as a growth. And I look at the Web 1.0 as maybe just going on websites. And Web 2.0 seems to be more social. 3.0 is trying to take this vastness of the web and maybe the vastness of the DOD and try to wrangle or wrestle some meaning to it, or maybe automate some of the processes using machines to search out other information on other machines.
That's right. The Web 1.0 is looking at pages of data and using human eyeballs to try to figure out what those pages mean, much like most of Google searches still do today. Web 2.0 is bringing pages of people information in front of you and along with pictures so you can decide whether or not that may or may not be the right person. And Web 3.0 now is getting into the meaning of this information. That's what the semantic word means. It's the meaning. So it's the meaning of what you think you're seeing, and not only what you think you're seeing, but the connections of the data that's contained within a page, not the whole page, but the data within a page to other pages, to other data in other pages, bringing all of that together in a way that then makes sense, because you have enough of the pieces of the puzzle to decide that it makes sense for your particular purpose.
And I think the bottom line is here for the listeners out here, this signal goes out to all kinds of people in federal government, people in the commercial world. You know, the issue here is the stewardship of the taxpayers' money. Am I pay taxes? You pay taxes? I mean, how can we most efficiently use the system we have now and not waste money and just organize the information. Is that pretty much the bottom line here, efficiently using money?
That's the bottom line. We paid for this already. It's sitting there, and we are using it at local sites. But for us at the Office of Secretary of Defense level, the OSD level, the question becomes, how do we know things like the percentage of time our military people have spent in theater compared to the time that they've spent at home? There are rules for that, and this number changes daily. We don't know the answer here in Washington. The answer is known in the field. So how to reach out there to that information and bring it back without disturbing it and know that it's true. That's what the semantic web technology is all about.
If you'd like to pursue the subject of the semantic web in detail, you can use Google search engine and type in Common Defense Quarterly and look for the Wisnoski, W-I-S-N-O-S-K-Y article. And it's a great article because you can play it out in 4 or 5 pages, but it's worth volumes of information. And it takes a real simple sample and it tries to draw some conclusions from a sample. For example, if you try to find members in the service with different qualifications, that's information that's stored somewhere in the DOD. The question is, how can you retrieve that information? And that's what this paper talks about. It says, okay, let's take this problem. And how would you apply it with all these large principles?
That's correct. Let me go back to the history of all of this kind of technology. A long time ago, one of the things that I did was study the history of how technology works, technology patterns. And it takes technology has about a 40-year cycle. If we look at where we are with the PC now, commoditization, they all more or less look the same. The prices are all the same and so forth. So it becomes a matter of individual choice. Wasn't always that way. The semantic web 3.0, takes away from the relational database technology that's 50 years old and gets us onto the next page.
Dennis, I hate to interrupt you here. We have to take a commercial break. When we come back, talk more about relational databases and the origin of this big transition into Web 3.0 and talk more about engineering enterprise architecture and maybe we'll use the big words like ontology and taxonomy. That's going to impress the listeners, I'm sure. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we had world-famous Dennis Wisnoski, chief architect and CTO, business mission area at the United States Department of Defense.
If sitting at a desk, working at a computer, or drinking coffee was a good workout, most of us would be in awesome shape. Unfortunately, they aren't. But that doesn't mean if you're behind a desk, you can't go move around some. Kaiser Permanente suggests organizing a lunchtime walking group. Nothing revolutionary, just a group of coworkers that walk every day at lunch. It doesn't matter where, what matters is the walking. Just 30 minutes a day. Studies show that employees who move around and get exercise feel less stressed, lose weight, and lower their risk for chronic conditions. When employers choose Kaiser Permanente, the walking group is just one of the many ideas and tools that we provide to help employees stay healthier and more productive. Find out how a Kaiser Permanente plan can help your employees and your business thrive. Go to kp.org/thrive9to5.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates has told the Associated Press that the Obama administration tried to improve relations with Pakistan recently by sharing intelligence on the locations where insurgents were making bombs, but it turned out to be a big disappointment. The two locations are in the tribal territories in northwestern Pakistan, but by the time authorities reached the facilities, the suspects had been tipped off and the buildings were empty. I'm J.J. Green.
Estimates show that more than 20,000 airline crew members clear security at our nation's airports each day. Since the beginning of this year, a unique group of 17,500 crew members from 61 different air carriers have been using the Airink Crew Pass service to test a new expedited screening process. This trial program at BWI, Pittsburgh, and Columbia, South Carolina uses 3 layers of secure data to positively identify each crew member in typically less than 8 seconds. Airink is focused on keeping you moving safely. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. This week, my special guest is Dr. Alan Dappin, founder of DocTalker.com, a unique healthcare delivery model. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
How can government executives drive performance in a cutback climate? What are the latest best practices for tackling today's human capital challenges? Join OPM Director John Berry and hundreds of federal managers to learn how to achieve more with less at Excellence in Government, July 11th. Register today for early bird rates. www.excelgov.com. www.excelgov.com.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Dennis Wisnowski, who is the Chief Architect and CTO for the Business Mission Area at the United States Department of Defense. Just want to jump in here. I don't want to brag or anything, but if you type in Dennis's name, if you Google his name, you get 20,000 entries. I mean, he's been everywhere, done everything, and he's going to be a featured speaker at a conference coming up in July. It's the third annual DOD and SOA Semantic Technology Symposium, and you can get more information at that. You can go to AFEI.org and click on events and find out more about the symposium. If you want to do a little bit deeper dive in this one-hour interview and find out some more specifics and how it applies to your agency and maybe applies to your problems. And if the topics we're talking about can't help solve problems, then we shouldn't even worry about them, should we, Dennis?
We should not. This is all about problem solving. So this conference is a very interesting testimony for the evolution of this technology. When we first did this symposium, actually, because there are a lot of heavy-duty technical papers there, we focused strictly on SOA, on service-oriented architectures. And then last year, we had about 25% semantic web technologies and had some papers that were presented by major companies that showed that they were actually much further in their commercial world than we believe them to be in this technology in our world. So this year's symposium is 75% semantic web technologies.
No kidding. Look at that.
And 25% SOA. And if this continues on, pretty soon this will be 100% semantic web, with the SOA being the orchestration layer of how to implement the technologies.
And it makes perfect sense if you understand what service-oriented architecture is all about. It's I got a service. Where in this organization can I use it or deploy it? And how can you do anything without governance? It's like a rule book. You got to have the rule book. That's great. So more information, AFEI.org. Before I rudely interrupted you, you were talking about a transition from relational databases and moving on from there. You want to continue that?
Yes. The technology development cycle is about 40 years. Every technology that I've studied has that cycle, and then it doesn't make any more sense to make continued investment in it. We can think about vacuum tubes to transistors to integrated circuits to microprocessors. We can think about piston engines to gas turbine engines and on like that. In this particular case, relational databases began back in the 60s. I was one of the first pioneers to use that technology, and it's worked fine for us through the years. But we've reached the point on that curve where it no longer makes sense to make giant investments in this. We're not going to make giant improvements. So we needed to look for another technology, and that's where the semantic web comes in. That's where we get to use words like ontology. And I said that the word semantic is meaning. Ontology is simply a description of enough of a description of a particular subject area that you are certain, with some degree, a high degree of certainty, that you know really what it means. And usually that meaning is within context. That's where the relationship between semantic web and SOA is so important, because what a SOA does, service-oriented architecture, is that it builds a business process model which points you, according to business rules, to the place you want to go to solve a particular problem or to bring back a certain amount of data and so forth. All of this fits nicely together at this point in time.
You know, well, when I was in college, I took a biology course, believe it or not, and they talked about ontology recapitulates phylogeny. And that's a pretty fancy statement. But all ontology is really just grouping information together in some kind of way that can be manageable. I can think of animals and species, but you can take that grouping and classification information and apply it to the data processing world, information technology, which is what the semantic web's trying to do, is trying to find and manage knowledge. And first of all, you have to maybe try to organize that knowledge somehow. Is that a good definition for ontology?
Yes, and you just introduced the other word, taxonomy. Most of us learned in high school, in our biology classes, how plants and animals are described. That's right. A taxonomy. So we fit us into the class of mammals and so forth. And a taxonomy is a vital part of this ontology because it says where within this puzzle that we're trying to figure out to solve a problem do these individual pieces fit. That's the taxonomy, which is a vital part of the ontology. And these are all giant words, and so we have other giant words that we try to avoid using in some places, especially cocktail parties, like canonical models.
Yep.
So instead of saying a canonical model, we say a common vocabulary. The purpose for this categorization, that's the taxonomy, and the verbal description, that's the ontology in sentences, is so that we can have a common vocabulary so that we can clearly know what we're saying to one another in a particular circumstance.
Yeah, we're not using any words just to impress anyone. Believe me, the audience is not going to be impressed. Half of my audience has got PhDs. They don't get impressed by these big fancy words. But we know ontology describes what is out there. Taxonomy describes where it's placed. Now let's take and apply that to the world of information technology. There's all kinds of acronyms that are very confusing we can apply to try and describe architecture. DODAF, MEGAF, SAM. I mean, in your paper, you talk about all of them. And the question is, I mean, what good are all these if they don't interoperate? And how can you maybe organize them in some kind of cohesion?
Yes, that's another invention that we've derived to have this work together. We build business process models. And what I found in the department and indeed in large organizations is that creative people will go off and define their symbols in any way that they want. When John and I went to college, usually in the first or second day, we'd go to the bookstore and we'd get a template. Yep. And that template would only have maybe about 10 or 15 symbols we could use. And what that symbol meant was written under it. Now, those were the days before computers. Today, we can invent any shape and call it anything. So when we're building a business process model, I build mine with my set of symbols, John builds his with his set of symbols, and then we have to spend most of the time explaining our symbols instead of what the model means.
Right. And so there's something called the BEA. Perhaps you'd explain that a little bit for us.
The BEA is the DOD Business Enterprise Architecture, and that Business Enterprise Architecture is an end-to-end view of the most common things that we do. Like we procure goods on one end and we pay for them on the other. So we call that an end-to-end process called procure to pay. There are other end-to-end business processes. One of them is called hire to retire, H2R. And so these two end-to-end business processes, hire to retire, procure to pay, intersect in some places. So we need to find out those places. And when we have people building these processes, they are subject matter experts, domain experts, pick your choice of words, we must insist upon them using the same symbol sets, not so that their domains understand them, they do, but so that we can do this cross-domain interchange of data and information, especially know when it has to be done.
It only makes sense. I mean, if I want a 9/16 wrench, I want a 9/16 wrench. A half inch is not going to work. And there's a specific way of defining that in my workshop. There should be a specific way of defining it in large organizations as well, I would think.
Yes, and that's what we've done. We call these symbol sets primitives. The idea is that a primitive is as simple as the periodic table of the elements. Each one of them are unique and distinct, and there are rules. There's mathematics in the laws of physics and chemistry that tell us what symbols make the most sense, what elements in the periodic table can work together and in harmony, like hydrogen and oxygen to get water, and what might put them together and they explode. So we are using these primitives to get the simplest set of symbols that we need to build these end-to-end business process models, along with the rules that tell us how to put them together.
And this is nothing new. In electrical engineering, they have specific symbols that describe an electric or electronic process. And so, and these are common terms that are used all across the world. And so it makes electrical engineering a little bit easier than it is.
Yes, for all electrical engineers, it does that. And I am electrical engineer, so that may have been what was in the back of my mind when we started this. I'm not a musician, but that also is a very good example. The notes of music, the scale, all of this is mathematically based. So people can read this music, whether they can talk to one another in the common language or not, they can in music. And even more importantly, a piano can play this music. A piano player piano plays the music all electronically. So the architectures that we write with these symbols will be able to be executed because they're sitting on top of an executable data store in the semantic web.
So a human can read the code and a machine can read the code, and we'll make this transition in the next block. And that's what the objective is here in 3.0 is machine-readable and human-readable at the same time to make things much more efficient. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We are speaking today with Dennis Wisnowski, Chief Architect and CTO, Business Mission Area at the United States Department of Defense.
What if learning a new language was as easy as watching your favorite TV show or playing your favorite video game? What if, while you were having your morning coffee, you could learn how to speak or read a new language? Well, now you can. Introducing an all-new, more powerful Rosetta Stone. Developed to fully immerse you in your new language, the all-new Rosetta Stone software is now easier than ever before. You can learn your new language on your computer, then practice in your car or on your smartphone or MP3 player without ever opening a book or memorizing a single word. It's never been easier to learn a new language. And to celebrate, Rosetta Stone is giving away free demo CD-ROMs of their all-new language immersion technology. To get yours absolutely free, call now, 1-800-900-2599. Immerse yourself in your new language. Call now and receive your free demo CD-ROM of the all-new Rosetta Stone software. 1-800-900-2599. For your free demo, call 1-800-900-2599.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
For over 40 years, Mantech employees have been solving complex problems for the national security community. Whether they're providing secure satellite communications to the Department of Defense or investigating threats in cyberspace for intelligence agencies, their work is distinguished by high ethical standards and a deep commitment to their customers' success. They've created a culture that encourages individuals to bring innovative ideas and technology to those charged with protecting the homeland. Due to the high demand for Mantech skills and expertise, they have tremendous career opportunities for cleared, highly skilled IT professionals, security experts, intelligence analysts, engineers, and technicians. In 2010, Mantech was selected for Fortune Magazine's 100 Fastest Growing Companies list, named a top 10 best employer for veterans by Military Times Edge Magazine, and for the fourth year in a row, was selected as a top 10 military-friendly employer by GI Jobs Magazine. Apply for openings today at mantech.com/careers. That's mantech.com/careers. Mantech is an equal opportunity employer.
HalfPriceDC.com is your gateway to the best daily deals in the area, all at half price. Don't miss out on a great deal to Westfields Golf Club, a Fred Couples design course in Clifton, Virginia. Get a round of golf, golf cart, and range balls, normally $100, yours for only $50 at Half Price DC. Westfields Golf Club. Public golf kept private. It only feels like a private club. Want in on this deal? Go to halfpricedc.com and click Sign Me Up. Halfpricedc.com. Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Dennis Wisnowski, who's the Chief Architect and CTO, Business Missionary at United States Department of Defense. I just want to remind the audience that on July 13th and 14th, Dennis will be presenting keynoting at a conference, and it's the third annual DoD and SOA Semantic Technology Symposium. So if you want to grab him by the tie and argue with him, or if you want to ask questions or interact with him or the audience, great place to do it. More information at afei.org, and just click on that little events button. Before the break, talked about a lot of general topics, and let's talk more about Web 3.0 and our good friend Tim Berners-Lee. And he wants to be able to have machines read code and understand things, and he's come up with a couple strange acronyms. One is called RDF, another one's called OWL, O-W-L. Maybe you can expand on both of those, please.
One of the things that we have to do to get this technology universally deployed as quickly as possible is not to invent things new that don't need to be invented. RDF stands for Resource Description Framework. It's a particular way of writing data, writing down data, the semantic in that's standard with semantic technology by the W3C, World Wide Web Consortium. And it defines data in what are called RDF triple stores, subject, predicate, object. John is a person. John's name is Gilroy, like that. And OWL is another way of doing this more precisely. It's OWL, O-W-L, but it's really web ontology language. It's another W3C standard. So we're using these W3C standards to define these triple stores to build our ontologies. These are being described by these business process models by another standard. It's the Object Management Group Analytical Conformance Class of BPMN, Business Process Modeling and Notation. It's how we build these end-to-end business process models, and they are stored. What they mean is stored in this RDF and OWL representation. That's how they can be executed.
You know, last year, the web had 24 billion with a B, billion pages. It's a vast area. For Tim Berners-Lee to try to apply this to that many pages, I think would be a challenge. But I think you almost have to do almost like a private cloud, you know, almost like maybe if this could be applied to DoD, it might work. I just don't, you know, tell me about this vastness concept. It just seems like it's just the whole internet's just too big to apply this. Maybe a smaller area can be applied.
It will be applied to the entire internet. According to the results from a conference that was held in Europe last December, about 18% of the data that's stored on the internet is already stored with this
already.
Already. And that number was about 3% from the previous year. I don't think that this will ever be 100%, ever is a long time, but certainly the curve is going in the direction. And the reason is that even while our processing speed, our talking about cloud computing and how the way we can handle communications today is faster and faster and faster. 4G is being introduced for our wireless technology, for example. But the amount of data is still increasing at a faster rate than our ability to transmit it. So that means that instead of sending these entire pages, we need to be sending only the data that's relevant. And that's where the idea of linked data, or some people like to use the word linked open data, comes in. So we use the technology to find the exact data that we want that's stored locally, and then that data is only data that needs to be transmitted, not giant data. And there's theoretically no limit to how big this can get, because if you pull the string back further, eventually you're finding only that one data element, the one Dennis Wisnowski born in Little Washington that is known to exist, rather than all of them around the world.
Named after George Washington, wasn't it?
It was named after George Washington. He actually owned that land at one time, and that's a whole other interesting story.
He was the biggest landowner in the United States right before he died. He owned a lot of land, many parts of it in western Pennsylvania. Different topic.
Well, I want to go there one more time. He was also a visionary and quite into technology. The Erie Canal, for example, the Route 40 that goes from Washington to to Little Washington and beyond. He was responsible for a lot of those kinds of things. If you go to Mount Vernon, you'll see some examples of the technology that the father of our country invented.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. A lot of his records were burned. Different topic. Let's switch. Let's talk about Web 3.0, the semantic web. One question I have is about terminology. If you describe something as young, my daughter may describe something as young much different than that. If I describe something as being tall, well, maybe in the NBA they wouldn't describe it as being tall. What about words and meanings and how does this all work as far as describing data?
It begins with the meaning of the data in context, exactly the way that you just said. The word tall within the NBA is the contents of the National Basketball Association or the context of basketball, and maybe even the context of basketball in a particular place, because some people are taller in different places than others. So we have the meaning of the words in context, and that context is the particular business process model. Another concept, and concept is a word of the semantic web, meaning within our common vocabulary. Another concept is called provenance. Provenance means you can go back to the original source of the information. What did this person or what did this organization mean when they said that? And that meaning is in context. So we build our business process models to be able to point to exact instances of the data in an exact place with the provenance being assured. There's this thing within the semantic web technology layer that has provenance, which is associated with trust as being one of the key elements.
So there's a common vocabulary, and that's just not done arbitrarily. It's done in context.
It is absolutely done in context. So that means that it isn't us CTOs and architects who are actually deciding these things. It is the subject matter experts. So just like in biology, if you wanted to build a taxonomy for butterflies, you wouldn't go to an arborist. You'd go to someone who knew about butterflies.
And that's the other question I want to talk about is this. There's some uncertainty there, even if the terms are not debated. For example, in the medical world, there may be some medical symptoms that one person may describe one way and another physician may describe another way. And this gets into, you know, how we understand things and how the human brain works. But that's what we're talking about here anyway, aren't we?
It is. On the way to common vocabularies, we have another thing that we do called a mapping ontology. That means that you can have your description of things the way that you see them within your context. I can have my description of things the way that I see them in my context. We don't try to change each other's context, each other's minds about the meaning of these terms. Instead, we do a mapping ontology. What that means to people who own these giant data stores is that we don't try to change their data schema. We only understand their data scheme. What did they mean within their context when they wrote that data store? And that meaning is established in this mapping ontology, which is then processed at the right time according to this business process model.
So there's an overview, and there's a common vocabulary, and then there's an implementation here where the artifacts are implemented. Is that correct?
That's correct. And so we spend a lot of time in this overview so that we can truly understand. We can do a simulation of the business process model the same way that when a pilot gets in an airplane and puts a destination in, or a person gets in a car, puts a destination into your GPS, you can look at the entire route with the graphic, or you can look at their turn-by-turn directions. And so you look at that and decide, is that what you really want to do? Is that going to work? Sometimes not, because you know about a detour that the GPS doesn't. So you have a chance to change your direction in that model before you ever step on the gas or push the throttle forward.
So that's what the business process management, I guess this would be like notation for business process management that would apply for the internet in general as well as for subcategories like DoD.
It does. And the important part within this notation, as we understand the symbols, as we point to the data, is that the true data that we thought we were pointing to, back to my provenance idea. And there it works because each of these edges, they're called in these RDF triple stores, subject, predicate, object, has a URI, a universal resource identifier. This is a class, a kind of universal resource locator, which is what we type when we do our www dot thing and we see all those characters that come back when we're doing a search on the internet.
Got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about primitives, primos, and prontos, the three Ps. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dennis Wisnowski, Chief Architect and CTO Business Mission Area at the United States Department of Defense.
Do you know us? You count on our technology every day. The office elevator that takes you up and down efficiently. The jet engine that gets you home safely. The fire suppression system you hope you never need, but know is there. You count on things we make to protect you from harm, and even to keep you cool and comfortable. Our technologies are a critical part of your everyday life. Yet many people don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. In fact, we are one of the largest manufacturers in the United States, which likely makes us the biggest company you've never heard of, even though you depend on us every single day. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
Stress. Sometimes a little of it can be a good thing. It can motivate and inspire us. But most of the time, stress is not our friend. Work stress can cause depression, headaches, sleep problems. It can increase your risk of disease and on-the-job injury. At Kaiser Permanente, we believe that stress is serious business. Because when employees are stressed, everyone suffers. So we promote programs that help employees deal with the demands of work and home in healthy ways. Like stress breaks, workplace yoga, stress relief classes, and more. It's a total health approach. That's what Kaiser Permanente does for employers that choose us. Provides tools for companies to keep employees healthy, less stressed, and more productive. Find out how a Kaiser Permanente plan can help your employees and your business thrive. Go to kp.org/thrive9to5.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
With vacation time just around the corner, Ackerman Security can help keep families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center and switch your existing system at no cost and that great $18.95 rate. And Ackerman is the only company with a guaranteed response time. Federal government employees get an added bonus. 4 months of monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates has told the Associated Press that the Obama administration tried to improve relations with Pakistan recently by sharing intelligence on the locations where insurgents were making bombs, but it turned out to be a big disappointment. The two locations are in the tribal territories in northwestern Pakistan, but by the time authorities reached the facilities, the suspects had been tipped off and the buildings were empty. I'm J.J. Green.
Estimates show that more than 20,000 airline crew members clear security at our nation's airports each day. Since the beginning of this year, a unique group of 17,500 crew members from 61 different air carriers have been using the Airink Crew Pass service to test a new expedited screening process. This trial program at BWI, Pittsburgh, and Columbia, South Carolina uses three layers of secure data to positively identify each crew member in typically less than 8 seconds. Airink is focused on keeping you moving safely. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
The Performance Improvement Council, in partnership with the Department of Defense, would like to invite all federal employees to this year's Performance Symposium in Lansdowne, Virginia, June 27th through the 30th. The symposium will feature sessions led by leaders from across the federal government. Focus areas include performance, strategy, budget, and more. Spots are filling up fast. Please go to live.i6sigma.com to register with the code FEDERAL2011 or email info@pic.gov for more information.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dennis Wisnowski, Chief Architect and CTO, Business Missionary at the United States Department of Defense. We've gone through some very interesting topics, talked about ontology and all kinds of fancy words. I thought we'd lighten it up here, Dennis, and maybe do my tech survey. 10 simple questions, maybe allow you to connect with the audience a little bit better. Year of your first computer, when was that?
I had a Trash 80.
A Trash 80, around 79, 80?
Yeah, it was. Actually, yeah, but probably 1981.
Yeah, okay.
And
that's Radio Shack.
40 characters across, 4 lines of 40 characters. And I gave each one of those things to each of my salespeople, and they had a modem.
Whoa.
Back in those days, acoustical coupler.
Probably 30 baud modem, huh?
30 baud.
Wow, man.
I think it was a little bit faster than that, but maybe 60. But when they went finished the sales call, they ran to the nearest telephone booth, and they sent in their report.
Ooh,
it all worked.
I like it. Year of your first cell phone?
I had the first Motorola brick. So that was probably, what year was it? In the 80s, probably 90, somewhere in there.
You probably need a 15-inch arm to carry that thing around.
It was the very first one. It was the one that looked like a walkie-talkie.
Yeah, we know that one. Operating system on your computer at home?
Well, I have several computers. I have actually too many, 6. With
multiple Mac, Unix,
I have 3 Macs, and I have 3 PCs.
Okay.
And the PCs have Windows 7 on them.
You're getting qualified as a nerd here. Okay, connection at home, DSL, cable, T1. What do you got?
I have where I live here in Washington and Chicago. The only thing available is Comcast.
Okay,
so that's what I have.
Smartphone or feature phone? What flavor?
I have Droid X. Okay. I got it on July 18th last year, the first day they were available.
Number of apps you've downloaded?
Not very many.
Okay.
Because they mostly require a lot of personal stuff, and in my job, I try to stay away from that.
I understand that. Do you have a tablet device, iPad?
I bought my wife an iPad, but I figure with 6 computers and 2 cell phones in my pocket, that's enough.
Social networking, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, you participate?
I have a Twitter account. I haven't used it for a year. My thumbs are already sore from other things. I have a Facebook account. I have minimal data on it. I have a LinkedIn account, and I keep that one fairly current and have hundreds of connections.
Right. And the last book you read was electronic or paper?
Well, I'm debating the move to electronic. It's paper, and a lot of it is listening when I'm traveling someplace, listening to CDs still, or to things I've converted to my Droid or my iPod. And paper, I'm waiting for color, and I'm waiting for bendable, which I think is probably about 2 to 3 years away.
I wish we could do like in the old TV shows where they have a little like a gauge, go click, 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 and then the nerdometer and click.
Yeah.
And you're pretty much solid in the nerd area there with all those computers at home, but weak in kind of the other areas like social networking and blogging. But you're probably more of a C, C plus, maybe B in the nerd world. So you got a lot of work to do, my friend. You need like 5 blogs and 12 Twitter accounts.
It's a matter of time. I figure that I can only. The input operation needs to be kind of the same. And so I spend a whole lot of time inputting, learning, listening, reading what other people are saying.
That's good, good, good. Dennis Wisnowski is going to be highlighting at a conference coming up here in July. It's the 3rd annual DOD SOA Semantic Technology Symposium. If you'd like to hear Dennis get some more details, hear other people's opinions, maybe they disagree with Dennis, heaven forbid, you can go to the symposium. More information at afei.org and click on that little events button. And before the break, we were talking about some big fancy pants words like ontology and taxonomy. But really, the idea here is to efficiently use the money we're spending on technology and try to get everyone on the same page. Is that being too simple there?
No, that's right on. Everyone on the same page, or at least similar pages in the short term, moving towards the same page in the longer term. I certainly understand that in a massive organization the size of DOD or any big company, it takes some time for these changes to take effect. That's why, as we're doing what we call the Enterprise Information Web, we look out 4 years. That's a reasonable horizon for the vision. That's the stake in the ground. We look out 2 years for where do we reasonably believe we can be, 80% or so confidence. And then we look out every 6 months, I mean, every 3 months from now. We call these every 3 months deliverables pods, proof of delivery, right? A nice little cute word. So every 3 months, there's a pod. And this pod, proof of delivery, gets us to the next point in our technology evolution. For example, one of the things we had to prove was that we could use this ontology approach, semantic web approach, to be able to retrieve data from relational data stores in addition to from these native RDF triple stores. These relational data stores have SQL searches. So how do you go from a search methodology, a search language called Sparkle, which is another W3C standard, to get to SQL, to get to relational data store? Our native way is Sparkle to an RDF IL triple store. But we had to have both. So one pod went right to the Sparkle, using Sparkle to RDF, and then the next pod went from the SQL to the triple store, and then the next pod combines them both in a federator. So on the way, this is a journey. So we look long term, we plan short term, we say every 3 months we're going to have something that's reasonable to show you. After maybe 18 months, this will be a revolutionarily view change, but it would have been achieved through a measured every 3-month development process.
Let me throw out a word question for you here. In my world, people talk about metadata, and I think what metadata is, and I think about ontology. How can you compare those two? Are those work together? Are they opposites? Do they one overlap?
They overlap. They work together. They're certainly not opposites. The metadata is the data that describes, let's say, an object in the world of music. It's whether a note is a B sharp or not a B sharp. In electrical engineering, the metadata that goes to with a resistor, which is a symbol of a little squiggle thing, is the resistance is measured in ohms and has some power in watts. So the metadata is data that we want to know about the particular thing that we're describing. So the meaning is described in metadata.
And so what ontology does, it describes different categories that you may or may not be able to use that metadata in.
Yes, the metadata is within the ontology, and the ontology is within a certain taxonomy. So all of these things, they're called concepts in the semantic web world, need to be fit together. That's why one of the things that we also need to figure out as we go along in our pods is we need an ontology of the ontologies. There are, these ontologies are built according to the standards, and since I described that each edge is found by a particular URI, the rules for how this is all done need to be understood, communicated, enforced, and so forth. So governance is a key to moving forward also with this technology, not just the technology, but the governance of how we're going to proceed together over a period of time.
I work with a bunch of software developers, and there's whiteboards everywhere, and they draw circles and write things. And I was writing down metadata here, writing down ontology. Where's XML fit in? Does it fit in under metadata then?
XML fits in under RDF and IL. The ontology is a top-down way of writing these RDF triple stores. The RDF triple stores describe what is in the business process model. XML describes what's in the RDF triple stores. So our way of using the extended markup language remains XML, but it's XML within an ontology.
I get it.
Going backwards is a whole other thing. XML can be a million character string. What does that mean? The ontology tells us the meaning of the XML.
Interesting. I want to maybe get out the crystal ball here. We just have about 2 minutes left here, and we talked about pods in 30 days, 90 days, 60 days. Let's jump it to 5 years. Let's jump it to 10 years. Earlier you talked about more and more people embracing the semantic web. Do you see this is going to plateau? Do you think it's going to catch up to all the new data, or what do you think is going to happen here?
It'll be pretty soon people will simply stop talking about it, because everything that is all the data will be described within these ontologies. The searches that people are bringing back now, doing their Google that 20,000 pages about me or whatever it is, how useful is that? You would want to find out some exact particular certain thing, and you want that to come back within 0.13 seconds rather than here 20,000 pages. Most of us only look through the first 3 or 4 or 5 anyway. So it will start to bring back those relevant pages, or maybe even ask you questions about, is this right or not? And then it'll take that answer and go someplace else that's more relevant.
Well, we spent the last hour talking about finding and managing knowledge and how to do it efficiently over at the DOD. We've had Dennis Wisnowski in the studio today. He's the Chief Architect and CTO, Business Missionary at the United States Department of Defense. And you are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Thank you, Dennis.
Pleasure's all mine.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Topping the news this hour, the biggest of the fires burning in Arizona is in the record books. CNN's Joshua Stewart has an update on the effort to contain the fire.
It's official. The Wallow Fire is now the largest fire in recorded Arizona history. Apache County Public Health spokeswoman Gaylene Kirkhorn.
The fire right now, the size of it is currently 469,407 acres. The containment at this point is 18%.
The fire has outpaced a 2002 blaze that burned about 468,000 acres. Meanwhile, crews continue to battle the wildfire, which has now crossed into New Mexico. Joshua Stewart, CNN.
President Obama is in Puerto Rico.